The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. We have Devin Henry today from our team. He is the head of Sport of Speed. We are big fans of what Devin has done on that platform, and the Indy 500 is this weekend. Devin is going to jump on board with us. There's a lot going on. The Tom Brenneman story for any of us that were here at the beginning of the Diamondbacks in 1998 through when Tom left. Have thoughts, I'm sure, opinions, people very curious as to what the Cincinnati Reds will do, should do, and all of that. We will talk about that. Plus, tonight is NBA draft lottery night. Imagine if the Suns at supposed to get the 10th pick, but if tonight, just because of the run of luck here recently, if James Jones is able to get 5th, 4th, imagine this, because the fact they have another top 10 pick and the draft lottery will be set tonight, the fact that it is August 20th and we're doing NBA draft lottery, like we're going to be doing NBA draft mock drafts in September, who would have thought? In this strange sports year, the Coyotes get hammered. The Pac-12 makes an interesting hire. Is it the replacement for Larry Scott, or is it the transition of Larry Scott? I'll get into that. Some health news I think that we should discuss on the college football platform of a quarterback who ends up having heart-related issues from COVID. That came out today. That we will get to all of that. Straight ahead, and the Lakers meet Portland tonight. So there's plenty to get to. We're brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union. For Desert Financial Credit Union and the Sports 360 AZ business, we are together. We stop in at Desert Financial Credit Union. We go online. We go on their app. It's convenient. It's easy. How many times do you guys go on apps? And you're like, this is really not great. I can make sure that transactions take place with my business through Desert Financial Credit Union's app, or if I want to stop in at several other locations, many are nearby me. It's simple, it's easy. If I just want to drive through or if I go inside, great customer service. It's hometown. That's what Desert Financial Credit Union is, hometown. It's not like Fred's on the corner, okay? That's not how it works. So we appreciate Desert Financial Credit Union and their support. Eric Sorensen is with us as always. So Tom Brenneman is somebody that you and I both know, someone that you and I both, we will never say worked alongside of, but we ended up having him on shows through the years. When the news came down last night, what was your initial reaction? Mine was one of, wow, he's done. And what was your initial reaction?
Initially, it was, why is Tom Brenneman trending? That was honestly my initial reaction.
Fire Tom. Fire Tom.
Of all the people that trend, why is Tom Brenneman trending? Oh, Brad, disappointed. A little bit stunned. You know, I'm not going to profess that I know Tom Brenneman really well, but I've spoken to him several times. I actually went to high school with his wife, so I know him a little bit. It's just unforgivable. It's unfortunate. I think it's unforgivable. Only because of the tone in which he said what he said. He said it with a purpose. It wasn't as a joke or a bad joke at that. It wasn't in passing. It wasn't used in even a remotely close to being acceptable context, and just right. The tone of his voice and the way he said it was just stunning to me.
Yeah, I was stunned. I felt bad for him. An open mic. I had an open mic incident, nothing like that, but I had an open mic incident. What we mean by that, for those of you that you know, are not in the business, or you want to get into the business, or when I teach, I go through this over at Cronkite, or just talking in general terms. Because I was out this morning, some business things, and people were all talking about this. It's all people were talking about. Because Tommy's reach here and with the Diamondbacks and the great years and all that stuff. And a mic that is hot means a mic that is turned on. this mic that we that Eric has and I have, we're this close to saying things that will get us in hot water and in trouble. We don't ever plan on going to that line. One time I was doing a football broadcast. I was a sideline reporter. I had a producer in my ear that was saying, "Where are you? We got to come to you." And I said, "Hold on, damn it." And somebody in the truck had it potted, turned up. I was 23. Doesn't excuse it. Unprofessional on my part. When you watch games and you guys see how sausage is made doing this behind the scenes. You know, when it happened last night, I don't have the clip of when it happened. Okay, but it was a slur for sure. It was an unacceptable term for sure. It was right off of a commercial break. Like, there was no talking, pause. It was like he said it and then like came right back in, which I was a little surprised by that. That Tommy was having that type of discussion that close up doesn't make it excusable at any time. It's just in a broadcast booth. You just wait and count down like 10 seconds, 5 seconds, and then we start. So I don't have where the slur happened, but I do have this from Tom.
I made a comment earlier tonight that went out over the air that I am deeply ashamed of.
Okay, so he made a comment earlier in the night that I guess went out over the air, meaning the engineer, if I'm to parse what Tom was trying to say at that point in time.
If I have hurt anyone out there, I can't tell you how much I say from the bottom of my heart, I'm so very, very sorry. Okay. I made a comment.
So here's more.
That is not who I am and never has been. And I'd like to think maybe I could have some people that could back that up.
So when he's asking for backup, when he's asking for people like that have worked alongside of him in broadcast booths, I'm going to throw some names out that people will not know and some names that people do know. Today, a guy like Bob Brenly. Today, a guy like Jim Traber. Today, a guy like Scott Geyer. Would be people that I would think would be asked, what do you think about what Tom said and what do you know about Tom in that regard? People like Mark Rita, who worked in the Diamondbacks truck, people that work behind the scenes. And I'm not excusing it, okay? But what Tom was doing on the fly last night, there's no way that he's sitting there saying, wow, I got to talk about this. People were really on him about his apology while a home run was taking place last night. I think Tom's done this for so many years, he's trying to apologize, and at the same time, a ball flies out, and it's just second nature. I think if he looked back on that part, and people were crushing him on that. The Cincinnati Inquirer today, in Cincinnati, the Brennemans are really the first family. There's Marty Brenneman, and there's Tom Brenneman. And their lead sports columnist did a story on it. It was on the news side. It was what was being talked about when I was driving around this morning going to appointments. It was what was being talked about on Sirius XM. It was what was being talked about over on some of the FM stations here in town that Tommy used to appear on. And people were trying to figure out Tom Brenneman if they ever saw this side of him. So the Reds to this point have suspended him. But Eric, they've not just suspended him for this night's game. They haven't announced the length of the suspension, right?
Yeah, there's no timetable as to if/when Tom will be back in the booth. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's a really good look for the Reds, but maybe they're just, you know, the Reds did what you'd expect. They put out, you know, the statement on Twitter and they apologized as an organization, and Fox Sports Ohio apologized as the flagship TV network. It just,
so last
I,
night,
I mean, I don't know. It just, I understand the Brennemans are the thing in Cincinnati. I get that. I do. But there has to be punishment when you say something like that, the way he said it. And his apology was fine. I mean, like, I don't know if I'd give him that same platform to make that public apology, but that's just me. It's sort of like, why is he still calling the game after this happened? But so that's not my decision to make.
So let's get into that, because I'm just trying to look for Tom's call here. Let me see if this is it. Hang on. No, they don't have Tommy's call up here. I think there is the moment that it happened, who was listening? Because people will say, well, people at the organization had to be listening. That's not the case. There's not somebody who just sits there in management next to somebody who's had a pretty remarkable 30-plus year career and monitors every word that is being said. That doesn't happen in broadcasting. Okay, so I'm going to give Tom's career has been distinguished. And so to think of, and you and I were going back and forth this last night on text, that he should have been pulled off the air immediately. Who makes that decision? Is it the engineer who's next to him? Because all that's in the booth is probably Tommy, his analyst, and the engineer. And that's it. So somewhere somebody had to say, okay, this was just said. Because Tom, in his first little soundbite you heard there, said, I have to apologize for something that came out over the air, I guess, earlier. So somebody poked their head in the booth, and they did get him off the air. I don't know how many innings later. I'm just trying to go through the process of he shouldn't have even been allowed to apologize. And if the Reds were slow on the trigger to get him off the air, we're not there. Who would have made that decision, especially in this COVID era, Eric? They may not even have front office people there.
I guess, Brad, the one thing when you say slow on the trigger, it also dawned on me this morning after reading a couple of the stories about the incident, is the TV should be in some sort of delay. And you know from our radio days, there's an 8-second delay, 9-second delay.
Yep.
I would assume the TVs are probably in some sort of delay as well. So like you said, not one person that was in the truck in Houston, where the game originates from, if you're familiar with how Fox Sports works, no one that was the engineer or Brenneman's color guy or whatever, you know, no one had the really quick, and that's tough because you're not expecting someone like Tom Brenneman to say something like that. And you have a very, very short window to make that decision, but it could have been avoided if somebody was really on the ball. But like you said, maybe it's only the engineer that had the opportunity to do that. I don't know.
And maybe the engineer, because Tom is probably in a booth in Ohio because they're not allowed to travel.
Correct.
And so he's doing the game there. And were there people down in the truck that said, hey, we got a problem here? Did the executive producer, I'm giving you guys a lot where you're probably saying, oh, you're making excuses for him. No, it's broadcast is not that simple. It's not like you just come on the air. So the timing of from when it was said to when he was apologizing to when he was taken off the air, all of that comes into play. I think the knee-jerk reaction immediately was get him off the air, fire him, and all that. And I'm not going to disagree with that, because on the surface you look at it and say suspension at a minimum. Do you go to the maximum? It's like Kyle Larson in NASCAR used the N-word and it was caught up on a hot mic. Should he never be allowed to race again? And in broadcasting, Mark Grace, who was just again in the news this last week, there was a time where he was on a hot mic in a Diamondback booth in Atlanta and said some things that were really inappropriate. And he ended up getting suspended. And Mark had some other things that were going on at the time, and he did his due diligence and penance to come back. And, you know, that's what happened on that case. I know that the sponsors are either going to say, nope, not having it. In this day and age, there is zero tolerance, as there should be. Are there going to be sponsors that say, I've known Marty, I've known Tom, we're going to stick with Tom, we're going to stand behind him? Are there going to be national voices today that come out and say, that's not the guy that I know? Mistakes happen. Forgiveness should take place. He shouldn't be back on the air for the rest of this year. Let's see what it looks like in 2021. Is a distinguished career end like that?
It's tough. It's a tough deal. And I think, Brad, if he would have said what he said 15 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, it would not be the firestorm that it has turned into. But thankfully, we as a society have progressed past that, and we're in a different space now where what he said is a big deal, and it should be a big deal.
Some people I talk to today think it's nothing, and that they have a different political leaning. Some people were just like, it's not a big deal. That's something we used on the playground when we were in seventh and eighth grade. It doesn't mean it was right.
Yeah, but you just proved my point. When did they say it? In seventh and eighth grade.
Right, right.
These people are my age, your age.
And when there's, yes, and they're of different race. When I talk with people that are older than me, and they've used inappropriate words, I've had to say, please don't use that word. It's the N word. Please don't use that word. And then I get later, well, you know, that's just how he grew up. That's just how he grew up. Somebody in Cincinnati said, I wonder what Marge Schott is doing tonight. Is she smiling?
You know, that was a name that certainly crossed my mind when all sure. this came down. Same sure. organization. And
Yep. But I think the discussion of this about the person that I know, in Tom's case, I don't know him in that way. I've just known that on the air, he's as professional as anybody's ever been.
And ridiculously talented. I mean, don't forget, he also does the NFL on Fox, and he's really good calling NFL games too. So
right. He knows how to capture the moment. He's been on the biggest of stage. But it's just like, to a different end, what we see in society right now, people aren't having it. People are not having any of it. And when this happens, there are jobs that are taken away. There are the consequences to pay. A suspension may not be enough.
Yeah. And Brad, what is a suspension? I mean, like to people like Tom Brenneman, who has plenty of money and plenty of clout, like, is a suspension something that's really going to make him sit back and think, I really messed up? Or is a suspension like, well, that was regrettable what I said, but you know what? It's going to pass and everything's going to be fine. And I'm going to come back, you know, like you said, maybe in 2021. And eventually this will be out of the news cycle, with which it will. Or are the Reds going to make a statement and say, you know what, this is unacceptable, and we are moving on from this legendary voice, legendary family within our organization? It's going to be interesting to see, and I'm glad it's not my decision. I know what I'd do if I was in that spot, but they get paid a lot of money to make those choices, and I don't. So
well, and in the organization, too, there's players that the Brennemans have criticized. The thing that I love about Tom.
Which is great, exactly.
Yes, that's what I love about Tom. You know, the sugarcoating that goes on in our industry nowadays is just I know every announcer is on the payroll and has got to just, boy, this guy is great and he's in an 0 for 30 slump. And that's, no, they're not great. And no, we shouldn't be protecting players. If I say something on this show and people don't agree with it, they have the right to go out and say, you know what, you're full of it. And when I watch a game and I hear this, boy, what a great player so-and-so is, and he's not playing great, and he's just buddies with the announcers, you know, I don't buy that. I don't go into that. I don't agree with that. And so it's really, there's some players that just are, I'm sure, are thrilled with this. I would have liked to have seen Trevor Bauer weigh in last night. Unless he weighed in this morning, because Trevor has found it in his space to weigh in on everything, okay? Including his shoes he was going to wear last night. And there are Reds players that weighed in, but there was nothing from Trevor Bauer.
And oh, by the way, Trevor Bauer is having an incredible season on the mound with the Reds. I guess, you know, you mentioned those broadcasters. You've heard Dave Pasch call a Cardinals game, and Dave Pasch will call it as he sees it. If the Cardinals are playing well, the Cardinals are playing well. If they're horrible like they were 2 years ago, and they were downright horrible, and Ron Wolfley, to his credit, I listened to some of those games, not in their entirety, but when I was out and about, and they were brutally honest about how bad the on-the-field product was. And that's coming from the organization that cuts their checks. So
No, but I think like you pointed out to me last night, there was a fake Twitter account that was out there, and it was saying some things from a player that is not a fan of Tom's, who's gone after Tom in the past. Those people have all stepped forward. I have not seen, to this point, this morning, too many people that have stepped up and said, this is not who Tom Brenneman is. He made a regrettable mistake, because I think those people know in this day and age they're going to get shouted down. They are going to face repercussion. They're not going to step up and defend somebody. I just feel like
Marty did, though, Brad. Marty,
no, his dad did.
Was quoted. But yeah, outside of that, that's the only person I've seen. But I haven't been spending the whole morning looking and stuff like that, so yeah. I can't really speak on it.
I mean, the cancel culture that we're in of, I don't agree with this, and I'm going to shout you down, and then I'm going to just delete you, and you're never going to have a voice again, that exists. I'm not defending Tom. It's just there have been very few people that have come out. I'm not in a position to speak on his character. I just know that there's not been a better pro in terms of coming on the air with us through the years on time. Great information, great insight, always prepared, always affable. The only time Tom said he couldn't come on with me was he was over at Golfland with his kids. It's like 6 years ago, I asked him to come on there in town. He's like, hey, I'm at Cracker Jack's or Golfland. I can't do it, but I'll get to you tomorrow. And it's fine. All right, Devin Henry is going to be on the other side, and then Eric and I will get through to some other sports things. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, as promised, Devin Henry joins us. Sport of Speed. He is all over the racing circuit on sports360az.com. You call races, like these races that you do play-by-play of, what are they? When are they? Where can people find you doing this?
So it's basically simulator racing. It's on a platform called iRacing, and I work with the Global Sim Racing Channel, GSRC. And they do a variety of different types of race broadcasts. And with iRacing, you can do anything from pavement cars to dirt cars to road cars. So if you want to go to Nuremberg, Germany, and break out some F1 cars, you can do that on the iRacing simulator. It's all essentially, they laser scan tracks, they laser scan cars. So the idea is if you got into an F1 car, drove to Nuremberg, had that exact tire wear with that kind of setup on the car during this type of day, with the clouds like this and the track temperature like that, and your tires worn like this, and you race like this against this guy, this is what it would feel like in real life.
Wow.
And so I do play-by-play announcing for the Bootleg Racing League, Dirt Street Stock Series, and also their Grand National Series, along with a really fun group that I like to announce with is the Porsche Owners Club. They're all real-life Porsche owners in California, Porsche car owners, and they usually go in tracks over there in California and do wheel-to-wheel racing or time trials. But then with the pandemic, they went to iRacing, so I announced their league for them. So it's a lot of fun.
Do you race?
A little bit. I do race a little bit. And yeah. I'm actually in a group called Monday Night Racing, put together by Paul Sutton and Ford Martin. It's all NASCAR media members, NASCAR crew members, and also some drivers. 2 weeks ago, I restarted behind Kyle Busch, the two-time NASCAR Cup Series champion. And it was a green-white checkered. And we're going off for turn two. I thought I could keep up with them. I was wrong. My rear tire spun, and I took out the field.
Look at you. Devin Henry is with us. So this whole Sport of Speed platform, as it's grown, as you've grown doing it, you've come across some really cool stories. And one was out at Phoenix Raceway that Good Morning America picked up on here a few weeks back. How have you seen this in COVID, Devin, when you talk to Julie Giese or the people over at Phoenix Raceway, because we have the biggest race of the year remaining in November. And I don't know if it's going to happen on time. I don't know if it's going to happen with fans. I asked Governor Ducey about it a few weeks back. He kind of kicked the can down the road. What is it you're hearing around Phoenix Raceway with COVID and this monster NASCAR race coming? It's 250,000 fans, right?
Well, not exactly 250,000 fans at the track, probably more so around 75,000. But then, of course, you get the few million watching on television for the NASCAR championship. But I do know for a fact, 100%, it will be November 6th, 7th, and the 8th. That's the plan. That's what they have solidified in stone, because NASCAR They run 36 races over the course of the year, from the Daytona 500 in February to the championship in November. And NASCAR right now is scheduled. They have their entire schedule worked out to finish all 36 races, their full season, on time at Phoenix November 8th. So the championship will be on November 8th for the NASCAR Cup Series. Now, the differences are it's going to be a one-day show. Typically, drivers get to go in. They have two practice sessions to test their car, qualifying session to set the grid. That happens Friday and Saturday before the race on Sunday. That's not going to happen due to COVID. So these guys are going to come to the racetrack Sunday morning. They're going to fly more than likely, or they might stay overnight on Saturday, fly to the track, and the first time they hit that throttle and go 160 miles an hour is their first lap on the track with 39 other cars for a championship. So it's going to be extremely different, and they might even change up the rules package. They're going to change how these cars are set up potentially because of how good the racing was at New Hampshire, a fellow one-mile track that Phoenix just really hasn't seen. They haven't seen great racing on a one-mile track. So this might be a car that these drivers have never driven before, the way that they're going to be set up for the first time diving 160 miles per hour into turn number one.
So the number I threw at you, about 250,000, I'm talking about 75, 75, 75, all the people that show up with their motorhomes that don't even come in. All of those people, forget about the TV audience. Do you know yet, we had Julie Giese on from Phoenix Raceway back in late June, about the number of fans that will be allowed in. What is NASCAR doing in terms of letting fans in?
That is going to be 100% up to the Arizona population. It's going to be up to the people here in Arizona to wear their mask and be safe, because you look right now, this Sunday is the Indianapolis 500, the biggest race in motorsports. 400,000 people in person at the track watching the race. Phoenix Raceway has a quarter of that, and Indianapolis is running no fans this weekend. Not a single person at the track. 400,000 is the typical at track, not RV, at track population for that 2.5 mile course. There's a chance that we see Phoenix Raceway run a championship race with no fans because of COVID-19. It's all up to the people in the state of Arizona to be responsible. That's the only way that fans will be allowed into the championship race.
In terms of the Indy 500, that's well put. So Mario Andretti, Marco Andretti, cool storyline. What about the Indy 500 this week? What are you looking at?
Well, first of all, you got some of the best drivers in the field coming from the back. And the Indianapolis 500 is special in qualifying in the sense that typically a qualifying session is you run one lap, fastest guy, you get the pole. Well, with Indianapolis, you run four consecutive laps, and it's your best average, or I shouldn't say best average, it's the average of those four laps. So you got to run four perfect laps, and they were averaging, Marco Andretti averaged 243 miles per hour over the course of, what is that, 10 miles? That's just the average. That's not even the peak. Probably what's going to make this Indy 500 different on the track, obviously, since there's no fans, is they added a new windscreen for protection. Brad, if you haven't seen them yet, they look like fighter jets. They look wicked. But in that sense, they changed how the cars are set up because they expected there to be more drag, you know, going through a wind tunnel, there's more drag. It slows the cars down. So they made the cars faster. Well, they kind of over-adjusted. The cars are going about 15 miles an hour faster than what they originally anticipated. So this is going to be one of the fastest Indy 500s in about the past two or three decades.
What is, how fast is too fast?
We've been asking that question for so many years.
Yeah, that really is the question around sport of speed and racing is how fast is too fast. It's the old line that the great Jim Murray wrote in the LA Times, ladies and gentlemen, start your drivers, start your coffins, you know? And so you just look at it and say, if they're going 15 miles more and he's at 243, is 260, like, what are we doing here?
And that's not unseen either. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if in the middle of the draft, they might hit 260, probably more than likely a 250 or something like that in the draft at Indianapolis. But we saw a couple of years ago, I think it was James Hinchcliffe. He was literally a kebab. He drove into the wall and a part went through both of his legs. Like, he wasn't supposed to be walking again, and he will be in the Indy 500 this year. So unfortunately, when it comes to racing, I mean, I don't want to say it's like football, because in pro football, we haven't had someone collapse on the field and pass away. We've had that in NASCAR and IndyCar and so many types of racing. When you're going 150 at all, you know, if you're going 150 on the freeway, there's a good chance something bad is going to happen.
Yeah.
If you're going 150 with 43 other cars, driving a foot or less away from you, something bad can happen. It doesn't matter how safe you make these cars. Something bad can happen. And, you know, driving 240, we could see that, could not see that. But too fast, I don't think we're ever going to definitively answer that question, because everyone knows that a race car driver always wants to go faster.
A little bit faster. That's good. That's good. Good stuff. Good seeing you as always. Stay safe. Thanks.
You too, Brad.
There's Devin Henry, Sport of Speed. You can check out all of his content on the website at sports360az.com. And, of course, you can find him doing iRacing. Devin is all over the place. He's got a passion like no other. And we're back with more after this timeout. So on the college football end, there was some interesting news that popped up very early this morning. That is the Pac-12 Network has hired Merton Hanks. Merton Hanks was, I would say, Eric, a villain if you're an Arizona Cardinal fan, because when he's with the 49ers, he's one of those guys that kind of was like this to everybody, and he would make plays and celebrate. And if the 49ers are beating the Cardinals, chances were really good. Merton Hanks was right in the middle of talking smack to everybody. They hire him in a position in the front office of football, and they've hired him as Senior Associate Commissioner for Football Operations. So it's a very big title. First of all, what do titles mean? I call you Senior Executive Vice President of nothing, because that's what Cotton Fitzsimmons, late Cotton Fitzsimmons, was known as lovingly. And so titles don't mean jack, but in this case, he is going to be devoted entirely to the football product of the Pac-12. Does this make any sense to you? To me, I look at it and say, is this the first step of Larry Scott being pushed to the side? I don't know if Ray Anderson represented Merton Hanks. That was the first thing that went through my mind is, oh, I wonder how this connection came to be. He was at Conference USA, so he cut his teeth there, kind of in the same role. What do you make of this?
Merton Hanks, really good player, Super Bowl champion, really long neck. That's the one thing I remember about Merton Hanks. He has a really long neck. I'm not really sure what to make of it, because I don't really know exactly what his responsibilities are like going to be.
Is he going to say, well, look, we have to put better games on the Pac-12 network? Oh, wait, we have to get distribution of the Pac-12 network? Like, okay, if you can't fix the network, what is it in football you're here to fix?
You know, you and I talked a few weeks ago off the air, Brad, and you made a great point. You said, you know, what is the Pac-12 network going to air this fall with no live sports? They have so many tape sports on to begin with, because they have to when the sports aren't in season.
Right.
But now is the time where the fall sports should be either in season or close to starting. And they're going to have no live games or programming until 2021 at some point. It's an interesting crossroads for a network that has clearly fallen behind the SEC network, the Big Ten network.
Right. But from what I've, my understanding on this, because I did send a text, and it's okay, officiate in college football. So that's going to fall under him. So Ray Anderson, when the whole officiating mess happened a couple of years ago, that fell under Ray. And I still think that Ray should be the commissioner of the conference. I still think there's going to be a day where Ray Anderson looks at Arizona State and says, yeah, this has been fine. Gene Boyd, you're the new AD, and I'm going to go to San Francisco or wherever, because their lease runs out on that palatial estate building that you and I toured. It runs out next year, from my understanding. So, you know, if you just look at a hire like this and say, what can you do 365 days out of the year to make football better, to make the Pac-12 compete with the SEC? That's not a one-person gig. You know, that's not what's going to make them compete with the Big 12. That's not what's going to convince a star player in Arizona to stay in the conference rather than go to Oklahoma.
I feel when, like, Larry Scott became commissioner right around the time that you and I started doing this project. And in the beginning, I think we both applauded Larry Scott for being a forward-thinking visionary with a blueprint for success. As he's gone through his tenure as commissioner, he's probably had more lows than highs. And I I feel that Ray Anderson, I think we talked about last week on the show, you know, he's worked in the NFL. He's worked at the highest level. He has held a very high position on the football side in the most powerful sport in our country. And I think it would be a seamless transition for him to take over as Pac-12 commissioner, mostly because not only does he know football, but he knows all the other ADs. He's familiar with how the conference works.
So well, I think he's familiar. Sense. I think he's familiar with the fabric of the conference. You know, what a president of a university wants is not always what an athletic director wants. And so within this conference, if Michael Crow sees something one way, what does President Robbins see at the U of A? What does the president at Stanford see? What does the president of Oregon State see? It's a conference that clearly has fallen behind on a media side of things. It's a conference that doesn't put teams in the college football playoff. It's a conference that doesn't put teams in the Final Four. But it is a conference that does well in the Sears Cup, which means a lot to people. That's all of sports combined. It's like a big deal that if other sports, if your wrestling team and your volleyball team and your swim team and they do all these things well, and Stanford is usually number one in Sears, Sears points, then your conference is in great shape. I think you and I both look at where the conference is, and it's not just one step behind. It feels like it's two or three steps behind. Is this the first step moving forward? Fine. But until you solve the distribution, because that is the metric that fans don't want to hear you and I talk about this stuff, right? Fans want to hear about what is Arizona State going to do in their game against USC. And oh, by the way, Saturday I can watch Oregon State play Colorado on the Pac-12 network, which is on DirecTV, which is on all different, it can be streamed. It's not even DirecTV anymore. That's like a 2015 conversation. It's
right.
Can you stream every one of these games? Because I am out of my boat with my phone. I am not going to make an appointment to go watch you guys. I'm not going to go to a sports bar. Those things are closing down, like Marley's. They're all closing down. I'm going to either sit in my house, in my palatial state, in my bathroom, or I'm going to be out enjoying life. But I'm not going to do things like they were done 10 years ago. Paul Feinbaum can do stuff on the SEC network. Pac-12 network just wants to focus on the lacrosse team and the girls' soccer team, and it's fine. I had a daughter who played soccer, okay, in college. It's great. But it's not going to move the needle with advertisers. It's not going to move the needle with content. And until that changes, this hire to me sounds great, looks great, must mean the conference has a couple nickels somewhere in the cushions to pay Merton Hanks, give him a big old title. Probably give him an office. Okay, what am I missing here?
I think Ray Anderson has, when Ray Anderson has a hunch, his hunch is usually right. And when you look at what he has done at ASU in terms of hiring the big three head coaches, he hired Tracy Smith, a hot coach at Indiana. And Tracy Smith came in and it hasn't been great, but it's better now.
Yes.
He hired Bobby Hurley, a relative unknown as a coach, and that's turned out to be a home run hire. If ASU basketball plays and if the season goes on and they're as good as everyone thinks they're going to be.
Right.
And then the biggest is Herm Edwards. You know, you didn't snicker at the hire, but I certainly did, and I know almost everyone in my circle did. And Ray just kind of sat back and kind of nodded his head. And sure enough, within 2 years, we've seen everything just completely turn around inside ASU football.
Right.
They've got an exciting quarterback. They have a really good defense. They have a real young, aggressive staff that does really well in recruiting. And all three of those relay right back to Ray Anderson. So,
but the detractor of Ray Anderson would say the booster with Bobby Hurley that was swept under the rug. In their opinion, I don't know any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There was the group that still to this day, and I don't understand these people to save my life, I have not renewed my ticket since Todd Graham was fired because Herm Edwards was not a great hire. Really? Are you serious? Are you serious?
And everything within the football world when Todd Graham was head coach was not sunshine and roses either.
No.
So.
No. And the people that wanted to make it sunshine and roses were on the payroll because that's their job. I get it. But the people around town were like, oh my gosh. And I don't know. He sat out a couple of years and he's at Hawaii now. I mean, what am I supposed to say? I'm not piling on. It's just, that's facts. This was a great move to bring Herm here, and Todd needed to go.
And you called it a long time ago with Todd. Towards the end of Todd's tenure, you put it, and I'm paraphrasing, you said, Todd is great at coming in and cleaning up a mess, but Todd is a job jumper only because that's just who he is. Like, he will win a little bit, and then he will lose a little bit, and then he will become defiant, and then he will either jump to another job or he'll get fired. Like, that's pretty much what has happened throughout his, you know, you haven't seen Todd Graham at one place for 10, 12 years.
No. A couple other things before we get out of here. So tonight, the Suns get any better than 10? Are we giddy? Are we like, they really have turned the corner? No. The draft lottery's tonight. We're expecting 10. If they get 5, if they have any sort of luck tonight.
Top 10 picks in the past have gotten us Dragan Bender and Marquise Chris. So I'll just see where
different
they end
general
up
managers.
Tonight, so. I understand.
They're still. I understand from the top.
I understand, and you know, their number one. Their number one pick has been.
And Luka Doncic is always going to be there.
He's been fine.
And Luka's been amazing.
But he's not Trae Young, and he's not Luka, and he's not some of the other players that were drafted behind him. I was always on that DeAndre Ayton train from the time they got the number one pick, so I'm going to stick with my guns on that. So.
Is DeAndre Ayton Sam Bowie with Michael Jordan being Luka? That's where are we at that point? It's only been 2 years. But right now, I would say, well, DeAndre's better than Sam Bowie was.
I mean, Sam Bowie was really talented. He just was hurt all the time. Yeah. That's what I think people forget. Like, when he played, he was good. Just like when Greg Oden actually played, he was not a bad NBA player. He just couldn't stay healthy. And so then the career got shortened, and then, oh, yeah, you're a bust. So.
Yeah, but I think the narrative is out there now.
I think you're right.
The Coyotes, did they run out of gas? Was Colorado that much better? Did the team quit on Rick Tocchet? I sent a text to someone inside the Coyotes yesterday. They bristled at the quitting on Rick Tocchet part. I don't know, when you get drilled 7-1 and
twice.
And Darcy Kemper, what's the number I've got here? 334 shots in the playoffs.
I mean, the epitome of that series, Brad, was yesterday when Colorado went up 4-1 or 5-1. And Kemper got beat through the five hole, and he took his stick and he turned around and he just whacked the top of the goal.
Yeah.
Because he got so little help in that series, and he was so good for most of it. But when you can't score goals and we can't even pressure the zone, it's a recipe for disaster, especially when you're playing against a faster, bigger, better team in Colorado.
Well, I think the downside on this one is, and this relates to COVID. We know that this is a front-running town. We're not going to apologize for it. That's what Phoenix is. If you win, they're going to follow. If you don't, they don't care. No in between. So the fact that they were able to beat Nashville and the idea of being able to follow a team in the playoffs, so you get to know the players, you get to know the personalities. Mm-hmm. The morning shows go out there and do all these goofy things that have nothing to do with the game. Then the games get played, the playoff beards, all that stuff got lost. And so for most fans, they probably don't even know the Coyotes went to the playoffs because they're looking at things like, I need a job. The unemployment's really bad. We know someone with COVID. And so all the positive around the Coyotes, their games being played at 11:30 in the morning, 2:30 in the afternoon. I saw the ratings. Ratings are really good. It's the highest ratings they've had since 2012. They're really good. They're not huge. So ground to build on. My thing is okay, the owner already chased off the general manager. You have Taylor Hall sitting over here who's a big-time acquisition. Wasn't well-liked, reportedly, from inside the dressing room where he came from previous. So are they able to sign him? Is the owner going to do some things that are knee-jerk reaction? Is the owner going to be very patient, say, okay, I've owned this team for a year, and it's not a toy, or are we going to find out, you know, it actually is a toy because he sold off Antti Raanta, or he sold off this guy, and Taylor Hall leaves, and they do nothing to replace him. And again, we're just back in the same circle of, yeah, if they get in the playoffs, it'll be kind of fun. So I'm really interested to see what the owner does.
I would be somewhat shocked if Oliver Ekman-Larsson is back next year, and I would also be somewhat shocked if we're not going to see another tear down and rebuild. Just from the people that know the Coyotes a lot better than I do, that's sort of been, if you read between the tea leaves, that's kind of what this offseason is going to be about. So
I would not be surprised, and I'll get out of here, I will not be surprised if they change their name. I will not be surprised they change their name. Coyotes is not a positive connotation in the Hispanic world. So I am just putting that out there from my view, and maybe others.
You have that little snicker on your face. Like, yeah, you know something that the rest of us don't.
I don't know. And I'm going to watch Lakers-Portland tonight.
Me too.
I am into that. Are you?
How can you not be?
I mean, if it's because you've got Dame and you know, the Lakers don't look very good. They don't have a point guard. LeBron's trying to play. He looks older.
I wouldn't say he looks older. I mean, game one, he was pretty ridiculous for someone his age to do that. But it's the same, you know, it's the same. LeBron plays well in the playoffs. Does anyone else play well? In game one, no one else really played well. So,
all right. Get out of here. Good seeing you. Good show today. There's Eric Sorensen, Senior Executive Vice President of Everything or Nothing. He has a zone read that he publishes on Thursdays. It's really good. If you are into high school and some college football, Eric's zone read is not just a few little things. He digs on it and gets after it. So it's really good stuff. It's up on the website with other content as well. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. He's the Iron Man. He puts up with this nonsense 3-4 days a week. I don't know. Or whenever we want to do a show. Head on over to our website and check it out, sports360az.com. Have yourself a great day.